Welcome to Healthline 3. I'm Jade Bilexa. Today, we are talking with board-certified rheumatologist Dr. Robert Goodman of the Arthritis and Rheumatology Clinic here in Shreveport about treatments for rheumatoid arthritis. Dr. Goodman will take an in-depth look at the latest information regarding treatments for rheumatoid arthritis for the next half hour, and will also answer viewer questions. Thanks for joining us, Dr. Goodman.
Glad to be here.
Absolutely. And before we get started, we would like for you, our viewers, to know that Dr. Goodman will give an overview of rheumatoid arthritis treatments for the first 10 minutes or so of our simulcast. And following that, call us with any questions you may have about rheumatoid arthritis using the number at the bottom of your screen, 318-219-4569, and we will take your questions from 1210 to 1230. And today, we will find out how breakthroughs in rheumatoid arthritis research have improved treatment options for this disease. And first of all, Dr. Goodman, what is rheumatoid arthritis?
Well, Jade, rheumatoid arthritis is probably the most common inflammatory autoimmune disease that we have. It is a type of disease which causes principally inflammation in the joints, especially in the small joints of the hands and the small joints of the feet. We don't know what causes it, but it tends to be a lifelong problem.
Mm-hmm. So what are the goals of treatment for rheumatoid arthritis?
Well, the goals of treatment start with trying to control the inflammation, which is the hallmark of this disease, and controlling the inflammation so that we can relieve the patient's symptoms and lessen the chance of them having pain and stiffness in the morning. And furthermore, we want to protect the joints so that the joints with chronic inflammation could get deformities, but we want to try to prevent those deformities. We want to return people to their normal life, their normal activity of daily living, if they enjoyed gardening, if they enjoyed golf or tennis. We want to get them back into those activities, and we want to do it with the fewest or least amount of complications that are possible.
Mm-hmm. So what steps do you take to meet these goals?
Well, it used to be that rheumatologists would take a gradual, slow approach because in the past, our medicines were not that good. But as in the past couple of decades, we've gotten better and better medications that can help. Those medications can control the disease, diminish the inflammation, and protect the joints, and not cause as many side effects as some of the previous generation of medications.
Mm-hmm. So tell us about the categories of medicine that can slow disease activity.
Well, some of the older medications were steroid medications that were used in the latter part of the 20th century. The steroids can give you quick relief, but unfortunately they have a lot of side effects, weight gain, problems with diabetes, thinning of the bones, and an increased risk of infections are chief among them. The next generation after the steroids were a group of medications called the disease-modifying anti-rheumatic drugs, or DMARDs. One of the best-known DMARDs is called methotrexate, but some of the other medicines in this family include hydroxychloroquine or Plaquenil that is also used for lupus, as well as a medicine that used to be called Areva or leflunomide. A long time ago, people would actually get gold shots to treat rheumatoid arthritis. And so that group of medicines were the tools that we had in the latter part of the 20th century. So in 1990, 1995, that's about all we had. But in the past 20 or 25 years, we've had a revolution with the new biologics that have come along.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so the goals of rheumatoid arthritis treatment is to put the disease in remission. So tell us about what it means to put rheumatoid arthritis in remission.
Well, one of the tools that rheumatologists use to assess rheumatoid arthritis that is sort of a surrogate of how active is the rheumatoid arthritis is to do a plain old physical exam. And we have 14 joints in my left hand and 14 joints in our right hand. So together we have 28 joints. And the rheumatologist can quickly look at those joints and see how many of those 28 joints are swollen. Are 10 or 12 or 14 out of those 28 joints swollen, and then they may touch those joints and move them and see if they're tender. And what we would do is put the patient on a treatment approach and then see them in a month or so to see if the number of swollen joints and the number of tender joints is decreasing, and we would like to get it down to one or zero swollen joints and one or zero tender joints. We're also monitoring lab work and a variety of other lab markers of inflammation, but our goal is to get it down to remission.
Mm-hmm. And tell us about treating to target remission in rheumatoid arthritis. What does that mean?
Well, what that means is we're going to try something. We're not going to delay too much. As soon as we've recognized that we have rheumatoid arthritis, let's get moving. Let's start treating the patient. We may start with that group of medicines called the DMARDs, or disease-modifying medications. But if we're not getting a good response, if we're not nearing remission in just a few months, we might be adding or moving on to the biological medicines that came along over the past 15 or 20 years.
Mm-hmm. And what is having tight control of rheumatoid arthritis, and how does it relate to disease activity?
Well, tight control means that we're trying to get down to very few swollen joints and very few tender joints. We're not going to tolerate somebody coming in, and initially they might have 10 or 12 or 14 swollen joints, and then they come in a month later and they have 8 swollen joints, and they come in the next month after that and they still have another 8 or 9 swollen joints. That used to be acceptable a long time ago, but it's not today. We want to really have a tight control. We want to get that, get those number of swollen joints and number of tender joints down to as low as we possibly can. We're also measuring lab tests. There are lab markers for inflammation, so the rheumatologist will do lab work, and the lab will report back your sedimentation rate, or your lab for inflammation called the C-reactive protein was very high when we first started this treatment, and it is going down. And those types of measures are what we're trying to measure and look for to make sure that we're getting tight control and approaching remission. We may also be doing images like x-rays to look for any early damage in the bones that could be rheumatoid arthritis, and then re-x-ray the patient periodically, usually 6 months or a year or 18 months later. But in the short term, we're trying to get those swollen joints down to zero, those tender joints down to zero, the markers of inflammation, the lab test, down as low as we can, back into the normal range.
Mm-hmm. So are there other aspects of treatment that can be helpful, like physical and occupational therapy?
Absolutely. Our physical therapy and occupational therapy colleagues can help us and help the patient with joint protection, with good exercises to try to preserve joint movement. But we would also be, the rheumatologist might be moving on with the new biological medicines to try to control that inflammation. Where the medicines like methotrexate, the medicines like steroids are sort of, if I put an analogy, carpet bombing the immune system and pushing down all aspects of the immune system. The biologics, such as the early biologic like Enbrel and Humira, were targeting just a little part of the immune system that was a communicating protein between a group of white blood cells. That those communicating proteins are called interleukins or cytokines, and we are targeting an interleukin that is called tumor necrosis factor to try to block a message from, if you use the analogy of an upper level officer ordering a lower level officer to cause inflammation that is a false inflammatory message. We're trying to interrupt that message with blocking tumor necrosis factor, as in the case of the medicines like Humira and Enbrel, or blocking some other communicating proteins. A group of communicating proteins called interleukin 6 blockers was developed around 2009 through 2012. A medicine called Rituxan is also used. Some medicines that block an interaction between some of the white blood cells called Orencia can be used. And in some patients, they may have a great response to a TNF blocker. Other patients may have not so great a response to the TNF blocker, but they may move on to the interleukin 6 blockers or the CD80/86 blockers. So It's not important that our viewers know all the specifics of these names, but realize that rheumatologists have lots of different approaches today that we didn't have in the past. And more recently still, some pill medicines, some oral medications — the other medications are injections — but some oral medicines called the Janus kinase inhibitors have come to fruition, and they are oral medicines, they are pills. Some of those medicines are something called Xeljanz and Rinvoq that can be helpful for patients.
Okay. And we are taking your questions right now. The number to call is 318-219-4569. So if you are dealing with rheumatoid arthritis, we'd love to hear from you if you have any questions. And are there things that patients can do at home to help in their treatment?
Well, there really are, Jade. And some of it is to make the — we think that rheumatoid arthritis is that the immune system makes a mistake. All of us have bacteria around on our skin. We have bacteria in our mouth. We have a different population of bacteria in our nasal sinuses, in our colon, and in other parts of our body. That community of bacteria is called the microbiome. And that community of bacteria, we can do things to make the microbiome in our body less inflammatory, look less threatening to our immune system, so the immune system doesn't make that mistake and damage the joints in rheumatoid arthritis, or in our colleagues make that mistake, in our gastrointestinal colleagues, and damage the colon in diseases like Crohn's disease and ulcerative colitis. And some of that is eating a low inflammatory diet, but I noticed that you others were talking about smoking and its adverse effects on other aspects of health. But it seems to be that smoking cigarettes makes the community of bacteria in our mouth, the population of bacteria in our mouth and our sinuses, look more threatening. And so smoking can make rheumatoid arthritis worse.
Wow, that's important for people out there to know, for sure. So tell us about some more information you would like people to know about rheumatoid arthritis. I know you were mentioning a story about Pocahontas and John Smith. Can you share that?
Well, that's just sort of a fanciful story, but archaeologists, there are certain bone changes on archaeological findings of skeletal remains, mm-hmm, of people that can be very suggestive of rheumatoid arthritis. And archaeologists who did work on archaeological digs in Native Americans in the southeastern United States, the Powhatan Indians in Virginia, the Choctaw, the Chickasaw, and Cherokee Indians in the southeast, found evidence of rheumatoid arthritis on their skeletal remains, but there was not that evidence of those changes in Europe until after the colonies started importing tobacco into European societies. And so there's sort of a kind of a smug what if. Importing tobacco, what if when Pocahontas gives the peace pipe to John Smith, mm-hmm, that introduces a change in the immune system in people, in Europeans, and causes rheumatoid arthritis to come into Europe where it was never there before. Of course, that's sort of a fanciful extrapolation of the data, but sort of fun to think about.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for sharing that, Dr. Goodman. And we have a caller on the line. Can you tell me your name and your question?
Hello, Melody.
Yes, my name is Melody.
Yes.
And I was wanting to ask Melody McCoy. I was wanting to ask Dr. Goodman, what or would probiotics help, and what kind of help could they possibly give to someone with osteo and rheumatoid arthritis?
Well, probiotics may be very helpful for rheumatoid arthritis. In the way they might work is they might make the population of bacteria in our gut and in our mouth, but in our colon, look less threatening to our white blood cells. If we think of our white blood cells, they are like on a, they have a wall in our intestinal tract, and on the gut side, inside the colon, are bacteria. And if those bacteria get in our body, then that can cause sepsis. So the white blood cells are there defending us from those bacteria. Some of us tend to have an inherited predisposition that our immune system makes a mistake and thinks those bacteria are threatening and causes an autoimmune disease, ulcerative colitis, and Crohn's disease. But also the bacteria in our mouth may, some of patients' immune system may make a mistake and cause the bacteria in the mouth to be responded to, and that can cause rheumatoid arthritis. So probiotics, we think, changes the population structure of the bacteria in our mouth and in our colon, makes it less inflammatory, and makes the threat be less apparent to our immune system. So that decreases, can decrease the overall inflammatory response. Other things that can be done to help is to decrease smoking. That can be helpful, but that in a low inflammatory diet can be very helpful. But I hope that helps you, Melanie.
That makes perfect sense.
You talked about osteoarthritis, and we don't think the microbiome story that I was talking about with rheumatoid is important with osteoarthritis. It tends to be more of a wear and tear type of arthritis, and taking glucosamine and chondroitin, which are the structural elements in cartilage, can be helpful for osteoarthritis. So probiotics, low inflammatory diets, helpful for rheumatoid. Glucosamine and chondroitin, helpful for osteoarthritis. And did you have another question, Melanie?
Yes, sir. Every morning when I wake up, and a lot of times in the nighttime, and I don't know if this has anything to do with the rheumatoid or not, my hands go so numb that stinging pain shoots up all the way through to the tip of my middle finger, and I can't make a fist in the morning because they're so swollen.
That could very well be a complication of rheumatoid arthritis, Melody, because rheumatoid arthritis, though it typically affects the small joints of the hands, it can also affect the joint of the wrist. The wrist has a next-door neighbor. That next-door neighbor is an anatomic channel or tunnel where our nerve that goes to that middle finger is. That nerve, when it is squeezed, is called carpal tunnel syndrome. So rheumatoid arthritis can be a common cause of carpal tunnel syndrome. It's as if you're on an airplane and you're in the middle seat, and you get, and a 300-pound person sits on your aisle seat, and a 300-pound person sits on your window seat, and you're squeezed in the middle. Well, the nerve that goes to your fingers and the thumb side of your hand tends to get squeezed in rheumatoid arthritis, especially if it causes inflammation in the wrist. So the inflammation in the wrist is squeezing on the nerve. The nerve then causes that kind of symptom. Now, there can be other causes of carpal tunnel syndrome as well, but that's a very common way that rheumatoid arthritis can be a cause of carpal tunnel syndrome. Thanks for the call, Melanie, because I think that helps other viewers kind of get a flavor of what we're talking about. And we were talking with Jade earlier that we want to decrease the inflammation. And so if we're decreasing the inflammation in the wrist by managing the rheumatoid arthritis, then we are decreasing the pressure on that nerve and decreasing the symptoms of carpal tunnel syndrome. Some other forms of carpal tunnel syndrome may need the help of a hand surgeon. But sometimes we can treat carpal tunnel syndrome if we recognize that it's due to rheumatoid arthritis or occasionally psoriatic arthritis or lupus. And sometimes the rheumatologist can help it in a medical way rather than always treating carpal tunnel syndrome with surgery.
And see, I was just diagnosed with psoriasis within the last 3 years as well.
Well, thanks for that observation, because Jade and I have had other programs about psoriatic arthritis, and psoriatic arthritis is a close second to rheumatoid arthritis as far as how common they are. And so in psoriatic skin disease, it's an inflammatory disease of the skin, but sometimes those same white blood cells that are causing the patches of psoriasis on our elbows or in our scalp could also cause psoriatic arthritis on that wrist joint, then squeeze its next door neighbor, the carpal tunnel, and cause carpal tunnel syndrome. So rheumatoid arthritis can cause carpal tunnel syndrome, as well as psoriatic arthritis can cause carpal tunnel syndrome. So talk with your primary care doctor or your rheumatologist or your orthopedic surgeon about that. Let them know that you have psoriasis, and then they may be going down the road to treating either recognizing rheumatoid arthritis or, in your case, more likely psoriatic arthritis, and then they would go ahead and move aggressively to control that inflammation, to relieve your carpal tunnel syndrome, but also hopefully help the skin rash and help the joint disease and get you to restored to a more functional life so that you don't have to be shaking your hand for 45 minutes or an hour the first thing in the morning.
I'm doing it right now.
Okay. Well, thanks, Melanie. Right. You seem to be a delightful person. Thanks for your call, because
I think that
helps others learn about this condition or both of these conditions.
Is it possible to have all three?
All three? Oh, yes. I wish there was a law that says you can only get one type of arthritis, but you can get wear and tear, osteoarthritis. As we get older, a lot of us have osteoarthritis, and you can get rheumatoid arthritis or psoriatic arthritis. Usually, when a person has a patch of psoriasis and inflammation, the nomenclature is to call it psoriatic arthritis. So you can get osteoarthritis plus rheumatoid arthritis, and you can get osteoarthritis plus psoriatic arthritis. But we have lots of good treatments for all of the above. Thanks again for your call,
Melanie.
I
sure do. Thank you, Dr. Goodman. Thank you so much.
Take care.
Have a wonderful day.
Wow, that was very informative.
So Melanie asked some great questions to
she did.
That I think some of our other viewers would find helpful.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. And so, Dr. Goodman, you are located on Jordan Street, and are you accepting new patients?
Yes, I am. I'm at 740 Jordan Street.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. And do people need a referral to see you?
Don't need a referral anymore. Most referrals used to have to be with HMOs, but that's not a common source of health care these days.
Okay, and tell us what your phone number is.
My phone number is 318-424-9240. That's in Shreveport, 424-9240. And our website is www.arthdoc.com, and we are on Facebook /arthdoc.
All right. And tell us, is there a connection between rheumatoid arthritis? Well, wait a second. We have Charles on the phone now, too. Charles, what's your question?
Yeah, my question is to the doctor. I was going to ask him about this arthritis. I have a pain that's coming up where my hand joined my wrist, and right there by the thumb is so. I guess you would tell me it hurts like I don't know what if I bend it the wrong way, and that like it locked and popped. But
did you say swelling or a pone by your thumb? I missed.
Right.
So you had a problem with your thumb. And does it get worse when you're using it?
Well, it gets worse at night. That next day I get up, it gets worse until I keep on moving it until it finally limbers up, I guess, and do what it's got to do.
Yes, sir, Charles. Well, that could be about four or five different possible diseases. We've talked about three of those today. The most common of those diseases, especially in your thumb, would be wear and tear osteoarthritis. But rheumatoid arthritis is a second possibility. Some people that have the skin rash of psoriasis, as our previous caller did, might have psoriatic arthritis, which is the third possibility. And then gouty arthritis occasionally can cause problems in the hands. Usually gout, though, has started in the feet. Us guys are more likely to get gout. And then a distant fifth is lupus and its cousins. You and I, Charles, don't get lupus too often. The ladies tend to. But those would be the top five diseases that can cause arthritis. It would need a little bit of medical detective work by maybe starting with your primary care doctor, maybe with an orthopedic surgeon. But if they don't get to the answer, rheumatologists like me do that kind of diagnostic evaluation all the time.
Right. Oh, okay. Yeah. Another thing, my doctor seemed to think I kicked diabetes, but I don't think so.
You kicked diabetes? Or?
I have no medicine to take.
Oh, okay. Most of the time, diabetes is not usually tied in with arthritis. It can cause pain in the hands because some people with diabetes get nerve pain, a diabetic neuropathy, but usually diabetes is not going to be causing swollen joints or tender joints. It could cause nerve pain in the hands. But I hope that's helpful, Charles. Thanks for your call.
Yes, it is. I appreciate it.
Take care.
Thank you, Charles. So tell us real quick, what about stress? Can that cause a flare-up with rheumatoid arthritis?
We think it can, and we think it can with psoriatic arthritis as well. Most of the time, the mechanisms of action that we can recognize, we can really draw the A to B to C to D, is this trigger of inflammatory processes. And we're learning more and more about that. Some people with rheumatoid arthritis and psoriatic arthritis, their immune system attacks the wrong thing and causes that inflammatory response. Stress can play a role, but it may play a bigger role in some other rheumatic diseases like fibromyalgia. And so sometimes rheumatoid arthritis, about 30% of patients with rheumatoid arthritis can also have fibromyalgia. And we, as rheumatologists, might be controlling all their inflammation, but they still say, I really hurt, doctor. I really don't feel well. And we find that the number of swollen joints has decreased, but their joints are still tender, even though their swelling is still there. And that patient may be the 30% of people that have both that may have rheumatoid arthritis and fibromyalgia. So that in that situation, we have to approach it as two separate diseases. We have to treat the inflammation of rheumatoid arthritis and treat the neuropathic pain of fibromyalgia.
All right. So do you have any final thoughts in our last few seconds of this edition of Health on 3?
Well, thanks, Jade, for having me. I want the audience to know that rheumatologists have better and better tools to treat rheumatoid arthritis. It used to be that we took a less aggressive, more passive approach, and we used to settle for still having 7, 8, 10 swollen joints. But now we can treat to target, get tight control, and dare we say, get the patient in remission to treat rheumatoid arthritis today.
Absolutely. Those are some great goals for people. And thank you to board certified rheumatologist Dr. Goodman of the Arthritis and Rheumatology Clinic here in Shreveport. It's so great to have you on again.
So great to be here, Jade.
Absolutely. And we'll have another show, Healthline 3, tomorrow. Have a great day, everyone.